You are listening to Think Theory Radio.
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 Radio. Radio. Radio.
Uh-oh.
Oh, it's on.
There it is. Yeah. It's on.
There's no light. How am I supposed to know?
Hello, and welcome to Think Theory Radio, the show that brings you topics outside the mainstream realm of thought and ideas to make you think. And I am your host, Damian Perdue, and my mic is on, so you can hear me, folks.
Need to replace that mic 4 light.
Uh-oh, mic 4 light's out.
Where do you buy a mic 4 light?
I think there's a store. It's down like Roosevelt and Clark. They just sell board op buttons. Lights.
Okay.
Just lights for boards.
I'll make a run. You hold it down.
Okay. There's no traffic right now.
No. I'll be back in a jiff.
We need that light, man. We need that board light.
See, if you're from Chicago, everything's 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Hey, where is that? Oh, it's just 20 minutes away.
As long as there's no traffic.
Yeah.
Then it's an hour and a half away. And that voice you hear is the one and only Pauly C.
Yo, yo, yo.
Right here on WCPT 820 AM.
Where facts matter.
Yes. And speaking of facts, today we're going to talk about the manipulation of the masses. And not a lot of facts involved when you're manipulating. Actually, you could use
alternative facts.
Alternative facts. You can, you know, manipulate the numbers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that's, you know, been going on for thousands of years, from religion to government and now to, you know, then to TV and radio and film, now to social media. And I want to get into a discussion on all the different ways we're constantly manipulated and how it's getting even crazier with technology and the way that they're kind of using our emotions and everything against us, and you know, deep fake and all this.
I was just gonna say deep fakes. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
And this is just the beginning of that.
Yep.
You know, I've already seen friends posting on Instagram with all their I guess they have like little deep fake apps that you can do now.
Really?
They'll give you like little clips of TV shows and movies and different music videos, and you can put your face on them.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's going to be more and more where it's just going to get to this point of we're not going to know what's real anymore. And this is, you know, like I said, something that's been going on for a long time, and it's been going on so long that the Hindus, in Hinduism, there's actually an epoch or an era that we're in now called the Age of Confusion, Kali Yuga. And it's supposed to be the last age of...
Isn't that like a Phil Collins song? No, wait, never mind. That's Land of Illusion.
That's a good song, though.
Yeah.
Cue that up for the break. But that's exactly what it is, though, the Land of Illusion. That's, I mean, you think about manipulation and where we're at in the United States. And I've always said it's kind of like, you know, our political system is very similar to our pop drinks, you know, where you have like you have Pepsi or you have Coke, right? You have blue and you have red. They're weird.
Oh, weird. It just blew my mind, man.
Take the blue pill or take the red pill. And yeah, it's and speaking of, you know, like Coke and Pepsi and marketing and branding, that's another form of manipulation. And the godfather or the grandfather to that was Edward Bernays. And he wrote a book called Propaganda back in 1928 that I suggest everyone out there should read. That should be required reading, like in sixth grade. Because it's easy to read. It's a short book. And it's interesting because he was a proponent of propaganda. He viewed it as something positive and something that needed to happen. And this is a quote from that book. says the conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. We are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. This is a logical result of the way in which our democratic society is organized. Vast numbers of human beings must cooperate in this manner if they are to live together as a smoothly functioning society. In almost every act of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct and our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind. And that was in 1928. He wrote that, right? And he was the nephew of Sigmund Freud. You know, so yeah. he understood psychology. And
what's that work by proxy, though? I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to think like I have an uncle that's like a financial right. expert, and I know nothing about finance.
Well, I think in this case, though, Bernays seemed to have studied his uncle's sure. teachings.
The family business.
Yeah, because he wrote another book called Group Psychology, or Psychology of the Group or something, and talks about like the hive mind. And that's a whole other thing. There's manipulation of the masses. There's also crowd manipulation. So you have, and they're kind of the same but different. You know, you have the manipulating the masses is more what Edward Bernays is talking about, and utilizing propaganda or kind of the way religion does and kind of gaining a wide quadrant of the public, where crowd manipulation is more focused. And that's kind of like the divisionary tactics of these political parties and the way they utilize certain, you know, talking points and phrases and to target, you know, specific groups that they want to maneuver and empower and get them to do, you know, do their bidding.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that more. So it's so prevalent right now. I mean, especially in 2020.
Well, it's an election year.
Election year. And the, like we, you know, we talked about just a second ago, the technology mm-hmm. that has been increasing, the availability of the knowledge of people's like habits and emotions and behavioral patterns and psychological profiling. They call it psychographicking is the thing. It's like that whole Cambridge Analytica scandal that happened mm-hmm. and how they were using Facebook to manipulate people to, you know, vote a certain way. And, you know, then you talk about Russian bots or, you know, Turkish bots or all these other bots and mm-hmm. bots from Macedonia, you know. And it's so much now that it's hard to discern what is what, you know, and that's why people fall into the rabbit hole, I guess. But, you know, they fall into the pit of these belief systems and these like articles about things that never really happened and get manipulated. I mean, like Pizzagate's kind of a big example of that, you know, and how that was totally like blown out of proportion, mostly through bots. But those bots were able to get like, you know, like a suburban housewife to start posting it. And then that gave it credence and credibility for other people to start reposting it.
Oh, well, Cheryl thinks that it must be true.
Exactly. And then eventually that leads to the guy who went into the pizza place and shot up the place.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, that's the scary part of it, because unfortunately, which is the ironic nature of the world we live in, is we live in the information age, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yet people don't seem to want to bother to gain information.
Or cross-reference.
Cross-reference. Do a, you know, little bit of research, you mm-hmm. know, little digging. People would rather just post it immediately. Like, oh, that's, oh, you know, especially if it fits their narrative.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a big part, because usually if you're engaging with an argument with someone and they're presenting their opinion or their what they think are facts and you cross-reference it, they don't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. Well, it disagrees with what I think, therefore it must be untrue. And it's like, well, there's all these sources that say otherwise. So.
Right. Oh, yeah. And then, you know, and we all fall into that trap of kind of defending yourself, defending your beliefs, even to the point of sometimes, you might overlook something that disproves what you're saying, mm-hmm. you know, just because you want to back up your own belief system. And especially with the way social media is set up, with Twitter and Facebook and the comment sections and the algorithmic patterns that are established and the kind of, the endorphin releasing, reactions to when you see somebody commenting, you know, you get that kind of rush and you want to go back and you want to comment against them and, you know, to people you don't even
like
know.
Someone with like a dissenting opinion from something that you put out there in the mm-hmm. ether. Because I would think, too, there's also the rush of endorphins in a positive manner of, you know, oh, I came up with this funny joke and now people like it.
I put that post out there
and now people like it.
Exactly. And that's another manipulation. And that's a known, you know, both of these are known by the companies that run these social media outlets, but they don't care because this is what keeps people. It's purposely designed that way. I know there's a documentary on Netflix now, Social Dilemma. I haven't watched it yet, but I know that it pretty much touches on that.
Yeah, I think you and I have talked about some of mm-hmm. these things that the documentary touches on. I mean, I'm sure there's things that we would learn, but I think for anyone that's been paying attention to what social media has been over the last few years, these are kind of the things that we've been warning people about anyway.
Yeah, and that's the scary thing, too, is that like we know about it, but yet have a hard time, you know, getting away from it. It's kind of like I relate Facebook to like cigarettes. You know, when you have a cigarette addiction, it's like you know it's bad for you, mm-hmm. but you keep picking one up, and it's almost becomes like chain smoking. From you know, it I've gotten
there's
a little
certain,
bit better
certain
at
triggers.
It. Yeah, there's triggers. There's almost kind of like subconscious, you know, reactions.
I'll tell you this: Facebook is a big crutch for mm-hmm. me, and I think working in media and keeping in touch with friends, it's a good way for me to stay on it. But I've found myself for years now, when I go on my phone, the first thing I do is go on Facebook, even if I don't want to go. Even if it's like, oh, I got to remember to set an alarm to wake up. You go on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Wait, that's not where I wanted to be. Or you get distracted. Like, wait, why did I get on my phone to begin with? Like,
right. Or that's why I made the chain smoking reference, because similar to that, it's where like there's been so many times where I go and I look on Facebook or Instagram, whatever, you know, and I scroll through for a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. I put my phone down, and within like 10 seconds or 20 seconds, I'm back picking it back up, looking at it. I'm like, I just looked at it. Nothing's changed, you know, but it's that kind of the chain smoking where you put the cigarette out and you're immediately lighting another one up, even though
you just had one.
And, you know, I'm guilty of it. I've tried to get better at it. The same thing with like arguing with people, you know, that with dissenting views or opposing views, and you get trapped up in this loop. And even what you were saying earlier about citing all these different sources, I've gotten in arguments with people who are like, well, here's a source for that. Here's a source for that. Well, yeah, but that source is, you know, corrupted or that's owned by so-and-so and, you know. And like, how can I trust that? And it's like, okay, but how do you trust where you're getting it from?
And that's one of the things that cracks me up, is because sometimes you'll throw an article and it's like, well, you know, that's a very liberal source. And, you know, but it's like, but there's a byline. I can tell you who wrote that and I can mm-hmm. give you that person's background. You're giving me something that has no author.
Right. What do you mean? A meme isn't accurate?
Or a meme. Or in the middle of their article, it editorializes, mm-hmm. you know, the whole thing. And it's like, well, that's, how could you discredit this one source that has a reputation for so many years of putting out quality journalism? But, you know, you go to like AmericanPatriot.net #guns or whatever. And, you know, it's like this guy's in the middle paragraph talking about his opinion about something. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, and that's the other problem, too, is where the discernment between kind of journalism and opinion blogging, it's kind of blurred because a lot of people who aren't really paying attention to what they're reading, if you see something online and it looks like it's written in the same kind of format as something journalistic, you assume it's from somebody who actually did research, it's actually from some journalist, but it could be just some schmo sitting somewhere, you know, writing whatever he wants to write, or it could be a bot, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And people, because of formatting and because of graphic design and the way they can present things on the internet, people have a hard time, you know, figuring out, you know, okay, wait, is this reputable or is this, you know, just some nobody writing about it, you know? And what's an opinion piece to, you know, I see like a lot of people posting articles, but they're actually just, I can't think of the word. What's it called when you know, like people pay op-ed?
Op-ed.
And it's like, yeah, that's an op-ed, though. That's an opinion piece. They didn't actually, you know, they weren't writing for that paper. Mm-hmm. You know, they were submitting their own thing. It's almost like it's basically an ad. They're, a lot of times they're paying for that to be in there. And people can't, you know, differentiate those. And so it's hard to know, like, where are we going to go? You know, where is society going to take us, especially in this country where it
doesn't help that right now, too, that journalism is kind of dying anyway because, mm-hmm. the newspaper is just no longer profitable.
Right. And everything on, you know, if you think back and even back in the day, you know, the news media, there was a lot of manipulation there and everything. But if there was definitely certain shows that had a little bit more journalistic quality and kind of center of the line, not biased on either side, and more was just kind of presenting the news. And now it's the 24-hour news cycle, and you have so many like the talking head shows where it's not even really about the event or the news story. It's about everyone's opinion on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they pick all these certain people and they put them up there and it's like, why are you picking these certain people? You know, and it's, you create these arguments on, cause it keeps people watching, mm-hmm. you know, people want the drama, you know, and it's like, are they really solving anything or are they just
something along the lines of basically there was a court case that basically said that, you know, don't take Tucker Carlson's opinion. Don't take him serious as a journalist, basically.
Right.
Like a
I think Fox News got sued, and then they basically had to say that they were entertainment.
Yeah,
you know, and in order to get out of that lawsuit.
And I want to say that was essentially it. Was mm-hmm. Tucker Carlson was the main point?
Right.
Of the show. I'm speaking out of turn, though. I don't know the facts about that, but I'm sure I could look it up in the break and find that out.
Use the Google internet.
The same thing that happened to Alex Jones, though.
Right.
With mm-hmm. basically he in his own custody battle, he yep. well, I'm entertainment, I'm not
right.
news.
Now
so he
that,
just completely
yeah.
discredited himself.
He discredited himself, and I'm not an Alex Jones fan or anything like that, but I know that that part of it was because his wife was using his like antics as a way. I mean, imagine that if you're in like custody court and you're
sending my kids to
saying.
A guy that said that Sandy Hook was faked.
But not only that, but the way he expresses himself on the show, you know, he looks maniacal and it's like, look, this is the, you know, father of my children. Do you think he should have custody? You know, so I think that was why he had to be like, no, it's just an act. It's just an act,
yeah.
You know. I still want to kind of get into the Bill Hicks conspiracy, but I'm not going to bring that up.
That, what, Bill Hicks is Alex Jones?
I don't buy it, but it's interesting, you know.
We need a guy like Bill Hicks in these times, though.
Yeah, but
George
it's funny
Carlin,
because they
Bill
had the
Hicks,
same
yeah.
they had the same agent. They're from the same town.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like one popped up when the other one died. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, that's for another show. We're not going to manipulate your mind with that.
I can't wait for the Bill Hicks, Alex Jones episode.
All right. Well, if you want to jump in on this conversation, give us a call at 773-763-WCPT. That's 773-763-9278. And we'll be back with more Think Theory Radio right after this.
This is WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and today we're talking about the manipulation of the masses and how we're constantly bombarded by lies. And, just manipulative tactics, whether it's marketing and branding, whether it's social media, whether it's the government, whether it's religion and TV. I mean, it's been, you know, well known for years that there's been plenty of propaganda films, plenty of like pro-war movies that are done on purpose, funded by the government. And even within sports, you know, you think about after 9/11 and how Homeland Security started dumping tons of money to the NFL.
Well, even the that first Super Bowl after was in New Orleans, and they changed the Super Bowl logo to have the United States with a American flag in the shape of the United States.
Well, they also started doing military recruiting at the games, you know,
and the big flags on the field.
So, and that's like, that's another thing too. Sports is another thing I want to get into, is like the bread and circuses and how we're kind of mirroring ancient Rome before its downfall. But I want another quote. I talked about Edward Bernays earlier, the grandfather of propaganda. And here's another quote. If we understand the mechanisms and motives of the group mind, it is now possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without their knowing it. In almost every aspect of our daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social conduct or our ethical thinking, we are dominated by the relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. And I believe that was from his group psychology book. But and he was, you know, he worked, he basically went from working with government doing war propaganda to working in the corporate world and helping with their marketing and advertising. And he kind of took what they would do with war propaganda and brought it into the corporate sector. He also worked with the CIA a lot later on. And but if you think about how, you know, marketing and branding and how they get us to kind of like want to buy things that we don't really need, right? And then also creating products that don't last as long, so we constantly have to buy newer versions of it. You know, I think, you know, back to kind of when we had, you know, I don't know, like the Walkman or just a regular TV or whatever, you know, pre-smartphone. It seemed like you'd get one of those. It wasn't like everyone was trying to get the next, you know, I need Walkman 2. You know, I need the Walkman 3, you know, and it's just funny to me how with the phones, it's become so much more of a disposable technology and, you know, keeping up with the Joneses kind of thing.
How much of that, though, is the phone becomes kind of defunct after a few years because the quality of apps, at least.
Well, and I wonder,
I've had the same phone for about 2.5 years. Well, yeah, I've had the same phone for about 2.5 years. It seems to function fine. Knock on any sort of wood I can find.
They're going to hear you and blow up your phone.
Well,
man.
Yeah, but in like 2011, I got, like, you know, it was like my second smartphone. It was like, it was just time. The iPhone 3 or whatever was just kind of finally starting to not really work anymore. Apps were getting better. There was more technology that was coming out. Somewhere in the middle of the decade, though, I had to get another phone because it was like any app that I used was just kind of couldn't update. You know, like it was just my phone couldn't handle what all these apps were trying to do. And since then, you know, we're talking about like Facebook Live as a thing and anyone can do that now. Or like the ability to do really high quality videos on your phone, the how better cameras got. So how much of that is just the technology got better versus, like you're saying, how much of that is because, the auto industry has been doing this for years of your car basically just is no longer operational and not as easy to work on as it was back in the day, so they want you to buy a new car.
Yeah. Well, you think about, you know, like classic cars and antiques that are still around, and if you maintain them, they're still around. I don't see a lot of the modern cars lasting as long, you know, or people even interested in keeping them around. You know, they don't have that same kind of quality, similar with the phones. But I know there's like, and I've had my phone like 4 or 5 years now, and I just keep pushing it to the limits. I know it's like, it's almost to the point where I probably need a new phone. But
this is like why my wife and I won't update our iPad whenever there's like a new you know, oh, there's the brand new iOS, because there's stories of it just gets to the point where now your iPad doesn't work anymore. And we spent way too much money for that for work purposes. And it's just like, I'm not in the business to just go out and buy a new iPad whenever this thing, you know,
and I don't think it's necessary, but I think that they've manipulated people so much that they think it's necessary. They think you need the latest phone for what? To post selfies? Like, what, you know, like, what is the real necessity of a newer phone?
I think that all depends on what people do with their phones for the most part.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm generally speaking, I mean, I think there are certain people that, you know, maybe work in tech or, you know, or doing a lot of videos or something like this, or photographers that might need something with bigger storage or better memory. But I mean, I think for the most of us, you could have a phone. Like I said, I've had my phone 4 or 5 years. It still works fine. I can make calls, text. I can take video, pictures, go online.
Could you do a Zoom meeting on your phone?
I have.
Okay.
I can. And, you know, I'm sure that newer phones probably work a little faster or whatever. You know, it's kind of like the you're waiting for the elevator kind of thing, you know, and it's like, oh, it's not fast enough.
Yeah,
it's really it's not that slow. You know, it's just your mind becomes accustomed to things moving at a faster speed than when you get on something that's a little slower. It's like, oh, why is this taking so long? And it's like 5 seconds, you know.
Yeah.
But they have us so trained in that kind of thing, you know, or conditioned. It's like, I swear to you, I used to have a Razor back in the day, right? The Motorola Razor was like the old flip phone. And then it was all sleek, you know, and I liked it. And it lasted so long. It was durable and it, like, worked. I could use that thing down on the subway back in the day, you know.
Yeah.
And I had it for, like, years, like, way past its prime. Like, I used to pull it out the bars and people would be like, you still have a Razor? I'm like, yeah, it's retro. So anyway, so I swear to you. So they called me, my phone company, and they were like, hey, you know, we noticed you're way past due for an upgrade. You know, you qualify for a free blah, 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 blah. And I was like, nah, I'm good. My phone still works. You know, it's fine. The next day, yeah, it just died, completely died. Like, couldn't even turn it on when it was plugged in. And I was like, what did you do to my phone? I know you guys sent some kind of, like, shockwave.
Yeah. All right, flip the switch on Damien.
Right. We're getting him on the grid, you know. And, but, you know, that's why I want to see if they do the same thing to my little LG 4 here. But I got a list from Noam Chomsky about the 10 strategies of manipulation by the media. One is the strategy of distraction. The primary element of social control is the strategy of distraction, which is to divert public attention from important issues and changes determined by the political and economic elites by the technique of flood or flooding, continuous distractions, and insignificant information. Number two is create problems, then offer solutions. This method is also called problem reaction solution. It creates a problem, a situation, referred to cause some reaction in the audience. So this is the principle of the steps that you want to accept. For example, let it unfold and intensify urban violence or arrange for bloody attacks in order that the public is the applicant's security laws and policies to the detriment of freedom, or create an economic crisis to accept as a necessary evil retreat of social rights and the dismantling of public services. Number three, the gradual strategy. Acceptance to an unacceptable degree, just apply it gradually. Dropper for consecutive years. That is how they radically create new socioeconomic conditions. They were imposed during the 1980s and 1990s. The minimal state, privatization, precariousness, flexibility, massive unemployment, wages, and do not guarantee a decent income. So many changes that have brought about a revolution if they had been applied once. Number four is the strategy of deferring. Another way to accept an unpopular decision is to present it as painful and necessary, gaining public acceptance at the time for future application. It is easier to accept that a future sacrifice of immediate slaughter, first, because the effort is not used immediately, then because the public masses is always a tendency to expect naively that everything will be a better tomorrow. Number five, go to the public as a little child. Most of the advertising to the general public uses speech, argument, people, and particularly children's intonation, often close to the weakness, as if the viewer were a little child or mentally deficient. And number six, the next five, I'm just going to read the basic gist. Number six is to use the emotional side more than the reflection. Number seven, keep the public in ignorance and mediocrity. Number eight, to encourage the public to be complacent with mediocrity. Nine, the self-blame strengthen. And that's to let individual blame for their own misfortune because of the failure of their intelligence, their abilities, or their efforts. And number 10, getting to know the individuals better than they know themselves. And that's basically what's kind of going on nowadays, is that through social media and all these algorithms, they're learning more about us than we know about ourselves, right? And they're using that information kind of against us and targeting us. And that's from Noam Chomsky's 10 Strategies of Manipulation by the Media. And let's go to a caller. We got Ed on the north side. What's going on, Ed?
Hey, Damien. Yeah, you know, you talk about propaganda and brainwashing the public. Yes. There is no organization worse than law enforcement in America. Let me give you some examples, and you'll hear this every day on the radio. Anytime there's an automobile accident between the police and an ordinary citizen, if the citizen causes it, they'll come right out and say, citizen smashed into the side of the police car. Mm-hmm. If the cop causes it, they'll say a collision occurred. Another thing, talking about lights and sirens on, which they always say they have on. Most of the time they don't put them on until after they cause an accident. But even with lights and siren on, I know people immediately think that therefore anything the police did is okay. No, it's not. For instance, if you hit a pedestrian, the pedestrian always has the right of way under Illinois law and many other laws. Even lights and sirens do not excuse that. And people have to realize that, because I know that's code. The minute you hear lights and siren, you will not criticize the police. You got to get that out of your mind. Another thing they do all the time, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is with these probable cause search warrants. If you ever read the United States Constitution, where it talks about search warrants, okay, it makes absolutely no distinction between a person's home and any other property. Just read it before you come to the part that says probable cause, where it talks about a person's property, be it a briefcase, a backpack, your home, anything else. There is no distinction that says a home is treated differently than any other of a person's property, which means if you believe they need a search warrant to enter your home, they need a search warrant to enter your car, your briefcase, your backpack, even to take your wallet out of your pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like I say, the police do, and the worst thing of all is with these concealed carry permits now. If somebody with a concealed carry permit shoots somebody, they'll say, oh, he had a concealed carry permit. That has nothing to do with the way he used his gun, okay? You wouldn't hear the police say when you run a red light at 100 miles an hour, oh, by the way, the motorist had a driver's license. And shooting somebody, there is no logic to saying he had a concealed carry permit, because it has nothing to do with the way you use your gun. Mm-hmm. And people better wake up to this, because what the police are trying to do is equate licensing with proper usage, and the two are completely independent. Wake up, people. Smell the coffee. Stop letting the police turn your mind into mush.
All right.
Thank you so much, Damien.
Yeah, thanks, Ed, man. And I pretty much agree with what you're saying there. And I'd add that, and I want to look into this. This is just me speculating, but the lights, because you when you mentioned the lights and sirens, that made me think of kind of my own anxiety when those come on, even if they're not behind me or they're anywhere. You see, like, sometimes it's just, and I wonder if they study, you know, which color lights, which kind of rapid fire, you know, which succession of how brightly lit or how, you know, they're intense they are, if that does something psychologically.
I think it might be just you're predisposed to be alerted by something, you know, especially with like the different colors. Because I think if it was just one light, you know, I don't know. Like, so you think of like the red light that you would see at like a store or whatever,
right.
And it's like, oh, okay, maybe you see it, maybe it's there. But just having blue and red and going really quickly,
yeah,
you know, in that strobe effect, maybe I don't know.
But I just,
I know what you mean though. When Like, if you're going down the highway and you mm-hmm. see all of a sudden, you know, oh, I better pull over. Oh, wait, they're going for someone else. You know?
Right.
Or they're not even, they're going the other way, you know?
Yeah. Or even, I think, just, you know, what I've noticed, too, driving around, like, downtown at night recently, you know, and they've had just massive amounts of squad cars and SUVs out there, and they just have the lights going. You know, and they're just sitting there and they're all over it. And it creates this kind of intimidating effect when you're walking around downtown and you just see like kind of cop lights everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it creates this kind of heightened sense of like kind of agitatedness. You know, you don't feel calm walking around. At least I don't. And I wonder, though, because if you think of the differences between the old cop lights and the new ones with the LED and everything, and mm-hmm. I wonder if they've studied things. Because there are, you know, firms that are behavioral pattern firms that just study behavioral patterns of people. And corporations and companies and government hire these firms to tell them how people react. How do we, you know, get people to do what we want them to do? Or how do we get them to buy this product? You know, so the fact that these, like, there's actual firms that study this and, you know, get hired by companies to kind of actually just manipulate people, it makes me think, oh, I wonder if there's anything to that with the lights. But that's another, I'll have to dig into that. If anyone knows or you want to jump in on the conversation, give us a call at 773-763-9278. That's 773-763-WCPT. And we'll be back with more Think Theory Radio right after this.
You're listening to WCPT 820, because facts matter.
Welcome back to Think Theory Radio. This is Damien, and today we're talking about manipulation of the masses and how we are constantly bombarded by manipulative tactics by government, religion, corporation, social media, TV outlets, media, the media, corporate-owned media, not independent-owned media like
no.
this lovely station, WCBTH20. And a lot of ways the America we live in kind of mirrors the ancient Rome times before the fall, and there was a concept of bread and circuses.
Ancient Rome fell?
Yeah. Well,
oh,
you know.
No. I hope we didn't base anything in our society off
all
of them.
Empires fall. And
no.
America is an empire.
Why didn't anyone tell me this?
Well, hopefully you'll be able to fly soon so we can fly away before it all collapses.
So if I just make some homemade wings and fly towards the sun, I'll be all right, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's not.
I want to say Damascus, but that wasn't the kid's name.
Icarus.
There you go. But what was the dad's name, though?
Oh, I have no idea. Was that even Rome or was that Greek mythology?
I know it was Greek.
I was confused.
Close enough. I'm sure the Romans stole it and had their own version of it.
There's some nerd right now that's like, these guys.
Well, speaking of Rome, though, bread and circuses was the concept attributed to Juvenal, not the rapper Juvenal from New Orleans, but a Roman poet active in the late 1st and early 2nd century AD. And he basically was saying how the Roman leaders were using free bread, free grain, and the kind of circuses to keep people diverted. Giving out cheap food and entertainment becomes the most effective way to rise to power. And we see that here. So let's see some similarities. Rome in the first 2 centuries AD faced a yawning gulf between the rich and the poor. And that's kind of what's going on here in the States, an ever-increasing gap between the rich and the poor. It says fresh research from the U.S. Central Bank shows the gap in income and wealth between the richest and poorest households already at historically high levels continues to widen. Another one is the mighty empire built on tribute reached its geographic limits. Is not the American influence declining while our military forces are thinly stretched? Mm-hmm. Its economy created few exportable goods. Are our manufacturing capabilities up to par? Are we not exporting as much as we used to? Slaves acquired by conquest built most of its bridges, roads, and aqueducts and took jobs in farming, mining, and construction. And it says, you know, what are we doing to rebuild our infrastructure, right? Our infrastructure is collapsing just like Rome did. And as this cheaper labor replaced Roman citizens, idle, unemployed, hungry people filled the capital. The Caesars created make work and part-time jobs, subsidized housing, and doled out grain. So basically, they had the gig economy back in the Roman days. The emperors added holidays until eventually the Romans spent half their days attending gladiator games, public executions, and chariot races. Right? And we see that, especially now. It's like every day is a national something. You know,
yeah.
Like national microphone day.
Well, and like Thursday night football. And
yeah. They stretch that out. Mm-hmm. It's like Thursday night, Saturday night. I'm sure Friday night will be coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
Disgusted, and this is talking about Juvenal, just mentioned, accused his fellow citizens of selling out for bribes of bread and circuses, which is a lot what happens now. And let's go to another caller. We got Wayne. What's going on, Wayne?
Yeah, how you doing, Damien? Long time, man. How you doing?
Good, man. How you been?
Okay, listen, here's a good example of manipulation. The powers that be are saying that basically the only way to cure corona is vaccine, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not talking about the immune, building up the immune system. All they're talking about is this vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Daniel, here's an article from September 14, 2020. It's the University of Pittsburgh Medical School. Okay, University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists have isolated the smallest biological molecule to date that completely and specifically neutralizes the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which is the cause of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
So they found a molecule that completely and specifically neutralizes the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes coronavirus. They're not saying anything about it. That's manipulation right there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely think that it's, you know, it's the quotes. I know Rahm Emanuel gets the credit, but I think it's been around since before him, is never let a good crisis go to waste. Right.
Exactly.
And you can see, like, it's whether or not, you know, who's ever doing the manipulative, they're utilizing this situation. Because if you think about what was the first thing that basically happened was they opened up the coffers for the rich. You know, it's like, here's the stimulus package, but the majority of the people weren't getting the money, you know, and now it's getting broken down and you're seeing all these like weird organizations and companies owned by politicians and all these, and you know, all the billionaires of the U.S. have made more money this year than ever before, you know, and then they're getting free. I was reading an article that said Scientology got $100,000 out of the stimulus.
Didn't like the L.A. Lakers get like a benefit from that PPP?
Bread and circuses. But no, I agree with you, Wayne. I definitely think there's some kind of manipulation going on. And then you look at, you know, there's time. I mean, if you look at the task force that Trump appointed, you know, with Dr. Birx, and there's a Slaoui, I think the guy's name is. He was a lobbyist for Moderna, you know, and they all have ties to the. Yeah. Well, not Fauci. No. This because he's not actually part of the task force. This it's Slaoui. He doesn't get a lot of press, but you look him up, and he was a lobbyist for Moderna. Moderna got $70 million from the government to develop a vaccine, right? So, and this is, you know, direct ties to the president. So you see this kind of like the money flow, right? So, yeah, man, I agree with you, Wayne. And I want to thank you for the call. I'm going to try to get to another caller.
Great.
But, yeah, man, it's there's something. Yeah, but that's what they do when anything, you know, to this magnitude happens, whether it's 9/11 or whether it's corona, they're going to utilize it. I mean, they did the same thing with 9/11. I mean, who made money from that? was the ones in power, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Cheneys, the Halliburtons. And whether or not you believe, you know, 9/11 was an inside job or it was actually the terrorist, doesn't matter, because who made the money?
But somehow 9/11 led to we have to invade Iraq, and mm-hmm. then Halliburton overcharging for the, you know, outbidding all the people at way higher of a rate than
The Halliburton drivers, like just the truck drivers, were getting paid like $50,000 a year. And yet, you know, we care about our military, and the soldiers are getting like $10,000 or $13,000 a year. You know, and they're the ones dying out there, right? And not only that, but you think about they utilized it to create the Patriot Act, which was already, they had in waiting, the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. There's all these different things that were created, more security laws, the whole, I mean, that led to the NSA scandal and them, you know, monitoring us, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole Snowden thing and, you know, WikiLeaks or whatever, but that's right there. Like, it, come on, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, not to mention, before we get to this next caller, MK Ultra, CIA, they literally were trying to create a drug that would control people's minds. I mean, if that ain't manipulation, I don't know what it is. But let's get to a caller before we wrap up the show. We got Dave in Hoffman Estates. What's going on, Dave?
Hey, Dan. You were mentioning about the bread and circuses. I never heard that history on that before, but the... I don't know if you recall, back in the early 80s, there used to be the food critic, James Ward. He's the one who used to always end up talking about bread and circuses.
Okay.
The food critic for ABC, and he always ended with chow chow for now. So.
Oh, yeah.
So that should be at least a little lighter note, you know. But anyway, have a good one, guys.
All right, thanks, Dave. Yeah, I mean, you know, I like bread and I like circuses, but... you got to watch out.
Yeah.
Especially that bread, man. It's kind of filling. Too many carbs.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer my bread in liquid form.
Beer.
Beer.
Delicious beer.
You know what I'm saying.
Beer in circuses.
like a couple quick things before we get... I was reading this thing about the hypodermic effect, and this had to do with Cambridge Analytica, and it was saying how they developed a methodology that allowed them to establish psychographic profiles of Facebook users and thus push emotional buttons that could influence the political preferences. To some degree, this represents the return of what's known as the hypodermic effect, in which the audience falls victim to powerful media that have the ability to manipulate our emotions and shape our understanding of the world. And there was another one about dataism, which is this belief that we're already chips in this big kind of matrix of data. And there are people
the plot of the matrix.
Yeah. But there are actually people that are dataists, and they're more focused on the flow of data than actually like living beings, like living organisms, are unimportant compared to the flow of data.
So what, do they pray to things trending on Twitter or something?
Yeah, I don't think that they're like religious more so than they're just like technocrats.
Okay.
You know, and believe that like technology is the way moving forward. And when you think about that combined with AI, and we might just be biding our time until we're all just digital projections of ourselves floating around the Ethernet.
I don't want to be an avatar.
You already are, man. I didn't even get into the whole, you know, the universe is a hologram thing, but I did that already, though. And just want to thank all the callers and everybody for listening, and tune in again next week and every Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m. right here on WCPT 820 Think Theory Radio.